It's one thing you can sing it, but is it this love that satisfies you? Is it this grace that keeps you going? You see, it's one thing it changed my life, it's one thing it set me free. And where my story starts is from where God brought me from death and brought me into life and changed my life and set me free. You see, my story starts when I was basically 4 years old. I grew up with my mum's all my life. But one thing that always changed me and challenged me was, why did my mum and dad break up? And see, as a child, you start to wonder, you start to think things. It starts to go around your head. And you always have that playing in the back of your mind. As I grew up, I had a great family, if I'm honest. My mum loved us to bits. My dad didn't. He wasn't at home, but when they separated. So basically, I longed to see my dad all the time. But basically, my mum, she was always there first. She is the one that looked after. But that always played my mind. I had a stepdad was in the house, and to be honest, from the age of 6, 7 years old, I detested the man. I couldn't stand the ground to even walk on. I couldn't be around him because I thought he was the problem. And then I started to think I'm the problem too. So my granny went to school in Barn Ridge, in Abercorn Primary School. And yeah, my granny looked after us all the time. Just brought us to school, brought us back home and all, when my mum was working in the hospital. At the age of maybe 8 or 9, I hated school, I hated the 40. I just hated anyone even telling me what to do, if I'm honest with you. And from maybe the age of maybe 9 and 10, I was just running about with friends up in Hillhead. We were running around just causing havoc, like, and at 9 or 10 years old, between smashing windows, stealing, and just going around, doing whatever you wanted, because no one could tell you what to do, like. At the age of 7, I remember the police coming into school, and me getting caught for stealing. I remember my mom sitting there, I'll never forget this day and end. Just, they're so grieved, so broken, and sitting there crying. I was so angry inside, I just didn't care. I had no emotions. At that age, you were just filled full of this anger, this hatred towards everyone. But the age, basically, I went to high school, and my great-granny died, and me and her were so close. We got on so, so well. When she died, I didn't know how to cope with it. I had everyone there that wanted to help, but I didn't want help from no one. And basically, 3-4 months later, my granda died. And I didn't get to know really my granda until he died. It was about 3 weeks. My granda loved to drink, loved to go out. And basically, that's what killed him. And 3 weeks, basically, before that, I really got close to him. But I had a nanny, and for so many years, prayed for my granda. And thank God he's in heaven now, because without my nanny being there, there'd be a simple place where you'd be now, and you know what there is in its hell. My nanny prayed for that man, he gives life to the Lord before he died. But to me after, that was it. I just didn't want to know anyone, didn't want to be around anyone. Just turned this into this, basically at the age of 12, 13, this person just full of anger and rage. I started to drink, started to go smoking, started to take drugs at the age of 12, and basically going into school. No one could tell you, the teachers were afraid to basically speak to you, because every time you did, you just ticked off, you cracked and you just lost a bob. And from that, basically I was pulled out of school, basically in 3rd year, nowhere else to go. And from that I left my mum's house, and my little sister was only born. And you hold the bundle of joy in your arms, something that means the world to you, and you wonder to yourself, how can you just walk out of that door? How can you just leave that precious child behind? And see, that kept me alive for so many years. And I moved in with my dad and Portadown. And me and my dad's a Christian, but we're so alike. It's like putting dynamite and a matchstick together. We just clash so much. But I went out around Portadown and I started making a name for myself. Between paramilitaries, between dealing drugs and taking drugs. I'm just drinking every day of the week. And basically through fighting around Portadown, that's how I made a name for myself. Around the streets and around everywhere. Everyone knew you. Wherever you went, there's just basically an axe in your back, you couldn't walk anywhere. Well, you'd end up in a fight, or end up off your face, or end up kicked up and down the streets. And that was life. You couldn't go anywhere for so long. And I remember just one night, and I took that much drugs, I remember just tripping out. And I remember sitting down a van, and I actually remember sitting, I'll never forget this, and it was actually like I saw my granda sitting beside me. And I was so wiped, I remember my dad taking me home in the car. And I was saying to my sister, no, did you not see Granda? Did you not see Granda? And she just broke. It was just in tears and couldn't stop screeching and crying. And my dad got to my mum's house and he's dropping us off. It was about 14 and my dad turned around and he said something that just lost a bob. And I remember just hitting and hitting my dad and I wouldn't stop hitting him. And only for my mum that night, my mum and dad don't speak, they haven't spoken in years. basically my mum saved my dad's life because I come to the place where I trailed my dad out of a car, where he's basically going to beat him to death, and only for my mum there, that's what truly saved his life. But I was brought into that house that night, and I hadn't seen my sister in so long. She was maybe one and a half. All I longed for was to see her, all I longed for was to spend that time with her. And obviously you couldn't be around her, mum wouldn't let me be around her, because it's so drugged up, so messed up, I couldn't be in that house. It was probably the first time I sat my mum for over a year. And I had nowhere else to go, nowhere else to be. And my mum just sat and broke, and everyone in the house, and I didn't know where I was going to go. And my granny rang, and basically said, she'll take me in. And only for my nanny, I would have been locked up. And what I went to Rathgale, I probably would have got worse, because when you go inside, you go in now the rest of your life, that's how it works. And only for my nanny take him in, I had nowhere else to go. But I moved in with her, and I don't think my nanny really knew what she's getting herself into, if I'm honest. But as soon as I moved in with her, it doesn't take long, the year past basically comes and finds you again. So I moved into Bonbridge, and basically into a Catholic area. And to me, where I was in Portadown, I was basically running around Corcrane, Kilcomain, everywhere around there was basically disloyalism. It was full of paramilitaries and things that people don't see. And what I saw in my own eyes, it changed me. It basically just brought this hardened heart, that brought this dullness that you didn't care if you lived or died. And so many young people out there say that, but truly I didn't care if I lived or died. I didn't care what happened the next day, and that's how I lived my life. And then I moved in with Manali. And from that, my uncle, me and him just went out partying, went out drinking, and until then, basically, I got to know Bonbridge, I got to know the people around it, and I started knocking about up around Hillhead. And when you're 15, 16 years of age, and you're knocking around with people 30 and 40, or high up, drug dealing, that's when you start to make a name for yourself. And if you don't, you get left behind, it's as simple as. And that's what it started, was making a name for myself around Bonbridge. And it just started the exact same things. The one night I remember taking a drug overdose. I sniffed that much meth that basically I remember collapsing on the floor. And it just turned pure blue. And it was like my heart stopped. And everybody in that room thought I was dead. I just partied on. And I remember coming around. And people were just like, what happened? It's like all the people around you, they didn't care what happened. They didn't care about you. They didn't care one thing. And that was the people I was knocking about with for so many years that thought were family to me. But no, they weren't. But I just kept on getting on, doing the same things. Every Monday, basically when court used to be in Bonbridge, every week, every month, I was in court. And I remember going one time, it was me and me Maddie Dugan and Steve Williamson. It was just the three of us always in court every week. And on that day, I was going to get locked up. And it was my uncle that basically paid my bail. I remember getting put in curfew and getting tagged and all. I'm walking around, and he thought that's it. Basically, he's put me in bail, and if anything goes wrong, he has to pay it. But at that stage, I started to look around and think, I don't want to live like this anymore. I'm sick of this life. I'm sick of taking the drugs. I'm sick of running around with paramilitaries. I'm sick of knocking around doing the same things all over again. When's this ever going to end? But sure, as soon as I got off the tag, it was just the same thing. I remember being down a Riverwalk one night in Bonbridge. I remember drinking, and I got a phone call basically that something was going to kick off, we were standing there. But I got a bottle just broke over my head, and was just kicked repeatedly up and down the Riverwalk. And the fact I couldn't physically move, and they had to ring an ambulance, and they put me on a body board, and they pumped that much basically morphine into me, that when they brought me to the hospital, that the brain fluid was leaking, basically through my nose, and they ended up with that bottle for kicking up and down the Riverwalk. I was sitting in that hospital for 3 days, just looking at the ceiling, and everyone coming and seeing me. But there was one pastor, he's called Johnny Brown. And I remember him coming to me and he said the simple thing, I'm not here to ridicule you, I'm not here to condemn you, I'm not here to shove God down your throat, but if you ever want to meet up and get a coffee, if you ever want to talk, I'm here for you. To me, to hear that from someone, I was like, he doesn't have a clue who I am, but really he does care. I remember walking around that hospital. It's the people I got to drop my stuff over. So I was taking basically the prescription meds that they were giving me in the hospital. But I was walking around the ward, whopped out all the time. Just walking everywhere around, just messed up. And even the people in the ward, they just called me to get me out because they just said, you're just havoc in here. And I come out and I remember going to my nanny's house and she said, is this it, Ben? Are you going to change? I never did. I just went back to just doing it all over again. I remember sitting one night thinking, is there a God that exists? Is there truly a God? Is he some myth that everyone talks about? My granny follows him. My dad follows him. And that's what I kept thinking. Just kept getting on with it. I remember going to the 13th of July, night of all places. I remember just drinking and drinking and drinking so much that day that physically I couldn't get drunk. I remember taking that much drugs that it didn't satisfy me. And I missed the bus and had to walk home. I remember walking down that road back to Bound Bridge. I kept saying to myself, that's it. I ain't giving up this, giving up everything. To do with the drugs, to do with the drink, to do with poor milkies, to do with all them people I'm sick of. I remember getting in the house and saying to my nanny and my uncle, and they're like, here we go again. Ben's off with an Irish spiel. He tells us every week, and he just does the same thing over and over again. I remember waking up on the next day, and from every drug dealer's number, it was in my phone, everyone I knocked about with. I remember just taking the phone and just smashing it. And truly then, now I knew, obviously as a Christian, but back then I didn't know, just the work that God already begun in my life wasn't easy coming off the drugs. When you're taking drugs 7 days a week, between methadone, between cannabis, between prescription drugs, the speed, the E-tabs, everything you could get your hands on. And that was my life for so many years. And it basically took 2 or 3 weeks to even start to wean down off them things. Most people you hear nowadays when they go cold turkey today, but I didn't. Not saying I know it was basically a miracle in the life of God basically changed. Them things that I desire. Basically over them weeks that I come off the drugs and went on the drink, flat out. But I remember my nanny asking, it was my best friend of mine, Tam, and we were sitting in the house and my nanny asked him, would you come to church? And as soon as he said yes, I'll never forget this, punched him straight in the mouth. And my nanny looked and didn't know what to say. And that week, the same fellow was sitting there, ready to go, dressed to go down to church. And I said to my nanny, I'll go to church, no problem, but I'm going the way I am now. I was sitting drunk, got a hood up, and had a scarf around my face, because I was that paranoid even to walk around Bond Ridge. And that's the way I went to church for the first time in Bond Ridge either. I never forget walking in through them doors. And what changed and challenged me was the acceptance of the people. See, sometimes we can walk in and ridicule people because of the way they look, because of the way they act, because of the way they dress. But then people didn't. They accepted me for who I was when I walked in through them doors. When I walked to the back and I sat down, basically with him, a Mongol, we were sitting there. And as a pastor, he got up and he shared basically when he was in Belfast how he used to be involved in basically the same things I was in paramilitaries and run the vine and just robbing and stealing and in gangs. And to me, that spoke to me on the way out. But I just walked out of church and it didn't mean basically went down one ear and out the other. The craziest thing was me and Tam were sitting talking to each other. And I said to him, we both looked and it really challenged us because he looked at me and I looked at him and said, mate, what if there was change? What if we really could come away from this life and really give up the things that we've done for so long? But he just got on with it. But that stuck with me at night. I just kept going and just drinking with him and just going out. I remember one night, I come home, and it was so early, and my dad actually rang me, and he asked me to come to church, and me and my dad hadn't spoken, maybe 2.5, maybe 3 years, maybe the most, we hadn't spoken to each other, and I thought to myself, why is he even ringing to ask me? And I went to church with my dad the next day, and I went the same way as I went with my nanny, but it was a joy I kept seeing these people. It's like, these people have something that they don't have, they don't need drink, they don't need drugs. What is it that they have? They're free, they're not bound. When I walked into that church, halfway through it, I got up and walked out and said, I can't be here. And I tortured my head every time I went there. I couldn't stick just being there, being around people that were happy, being around people that were joyful. It angered the life out of me. And I left that night and come home. But as I just went home, basically, and set my nanny's house, I started saying to myself, what if I become like one of these people? What if I really did become a Christian? Would there be a change? Would there be a difference in my life? I just kept doing and going on and drinking and drinking. But I come home one night, I'll never forget it now to this 10 till I go home to be with the Lord. I praise his name for it and I was sitting there when I drank. I just didn't drink to get drunk. I drank and drank and drank, and basically till I couldn't remember nothing, till I blacked out. I remember sitting in the house drinking, and the drink turned so sore in my stomach, I actually thought I was going to throw up. I remember standing outside the back, and I remember throwing it down the drain. And I clicked in my head, and I was like, did I actually just do that? And it took me like 2 minutes to think I actually just threw that away. I remember setting the bottle in the shed, and I remember coming into the house, and everything from music to basically anything going off, it just deteriorated. I couldn't stand the sound of it. I remember coming back out and I was standing having the smoke, hearing the very soreness, the taste of the smoke, basically I didn't even desire it. And I come in and sat down in that seat. And to this day I know it was the voice of the Lord, and I can never deny it. And the thing that struck me so much was, come and follow me. I'm the one you're longing for. The things in this world aren't desirable. But see, if you come and give your life to me, I'll truly make something of it. I'm the one that you need. I'm the answer to your problem. And that clicked in my mind. The thing I started to think now, so now I'm starting to come off drugs, now I'm starting to wean off drink, but now I'm going crazy and I'm even hearing voices. I remember sitting there, and my nanny walked in that night. It was about maybe 8:30 at night. And my nanny looked at me and she said, what's happened? And I goes, it doesn't matter. And she knew that night, in her own spirit, she knew I was going to become a Christian that next day. And I went to the church that morning. My dad rang up and I went to church for him. And I walked out. Just couldn't stand it, to be honest. But not the night I went. And I know people say they could see it through people preaching, through pastors. But to me, it was a young girl at 17 that got up and sang a simple song. Come and give your life to me. I'm the one you're longing for. And that just broke me. And I sat in that church in front of the hundreds of people in Port Adown, Ealing, and just wept and wept and wept. I couldn't stop crying. And to me, I held all these emotions in for years. I didn't even know what was going on. And I sat at that back of the church beside my dad, and my dad could barely look at me. He didn't know what was happening either. I remember getting up at the end of that church and walking down the road. This cascade swimming pool in Port Adown. And I said to my dad, if something was on your mind, what would you do? So what do you mean? I remember running back into that church. Pastor Ross was standing there. And I told him who it was, and the man there broke down himself. He goes, your dad's been standing here the past 5-6 years, crying in these prayer meetings for you. The whole church knows about you. And he goes, to be honest, I thought I was going to be the one burying you. He goes, what is it? And I told him I wanted to become a Christian. I told him just everything I'd been through. And me and that man sat in the back room, and he could barely even say, with me, a sinner's prayer, without him breaking down. I remember reading that prayer. And to me, when I come out of that church, all that anger, all that hatred, all that bitterness, everything that was all stuck inside of me for all them years, it's like this boulder of shame, of suffering and misery was lifted off me. It's like when I opened them doors of the church, the simple thing, the sky, the grass, things that I hadn't even noticed in years, it was like freedom. It was like a joy to come upon me. I remember walking up that road, and it was just walking with a Bible in my hand. I remember seeing two guys I used to do drugs with. And I remember them walking towards me. I remember putting the Bible down and trying to hide it. And what came onto my head was, he never denied me, so why should I deny him before me? And I remember lifting that Bible up, basically lifted it up. And these two people that were walking towards me looked at me, and I stopped and I started sharing with them. They said to me, you're a whack, you're crazy. You need to go and get signed in. Your head's just a way of the fairies. It's funny that 3.5 years later, the same two guys that said that are the ones that sat in the church with me. Yeah, they're not Christians, but it's funny now that the ones that call me crazy are the ones that's now coming with me to church, are the ones that stop me in the street and say, have you changed, Ben? What is it? You see, the thing that I was longing for was acceptance. You see, I found it in my Father in heaven. See, he was the one that freed me. See, people say you're a walking, talking miracle, Ben. No, he made me the walking, talking miracle. He was the one that truly transformed my life. See, it was his grace was significant in time of need. When I cried out to him, he was the answer. You see, many people have to go to rehab to get off drugs, to get off drink. No, you see, I didn't need that. See, the power of God changed my life. Release me from that burden, release me from that shame. And I can walk around that town of Bond Bridge Airport today. People are in their 30s and 40s coming to me. Ben, can I come to church for you? Can I speak to you, Ben? Will you pray for me? Why? Because I see the difference. See, that word can chew you up and spit you out. It can make a fool of you. See, it's the difference. There's two paths. There's a broad and a narrow path. You can walk on that narrow path with the Lord. You can find all you need in Him. Or you can keep walking in that broad path. You see, there's two opportunities. There's heaven and a hell. See, you're not something to play around with. See, there's accepting Him and there's rejecting Him. Many people have rejected Him for thousands of years. Maybe there's one even here tonight and He's calling out you to accept Him. To invite Him into your life. See, He's a plan and a destiny for each and every person that sits here. A future. But what will you choose? See, what He's longing for is people to truly get along with Him. To truly walk with Him. Not in the flesh, but in the spirit. To see others transformed around you. See, how can we reach a broken world? How can we reach a broken nation? By getting real with God. That people see it in you. I have a friend. He's going to rehab. He's been on drugs since he's 11. When do I ever think of the day I'd see him even go into rehab? See, every week I sit with him. Well, Ben, you shouldn't sit with them people. Now, the difference is who else is going to sit with him. So every week I get that opportunity to sit with that fella, talk to him, to put an arm around him, to be there for him. You know why? Because no one else is. See, sometimes it's the people we forget about in our past. It's not running back to them and sitting with them and being part of the world again. But it's saying that you need to go back to think of. See, we can just run on and forget about everybody else around us. Sometimes the same people is significant. The Lord's putting on your heart, that's putting on your spirit to pray for, to go and visit, to be near. Sometimes we can push it on and be so busy. We need to do this, we need to do that. Sometimes it's getting alone with Him, being still, knowing He's God. Knowing that He's in control of this world. All things are right. See, truly, I couldn't stand here with Ben if it wasn't for Him. I wouldn't even be here tonight, if that's honest. You've heard people pop on to say to your head, see, I've lived it, I've done it. There's nothing out there that satisfies. See, I found all I've need in Jesus Christ alone. The died on the cross for my sin. Thank you, each and every one of you in here. He longs for you to go deeper with Him. He longs for you to come and say, stop looking to the world around. Stop looking to the suffering of everything that's going on. To look on to Him, the Creator of heaven and earth. See, I've got the opportunity to go to Metro, to go into full-time ministry, to work with kids in the ghetto, in the streets of New York and the South Bronx. You see kids at the age of 5 years old, mental, physical, sex abuse to go through. Every single day, the parents that just beat them senseless. Mom gonna go to the shop, gonna go to the park, and they get a slap for asking that. See, it's amazing that God takes the foolish things of this world to comprehend the wise. I was that foolish thing, I was that stupid thing. God's brought me to reach out to people like that, to share my story with ex gang members, the people in them streets. The problem is so many people say they're hopeless, no, if this never been shown hope, so how can it change? See, that's where I'm going in 2 weeks time. That's where God's called me to be. See, He's a calling for your life too. Young Hannah. Will you walk into it, or will you keep dwelling in the past? See, there's an open door, but sometimes we're trying to open the closed doors. See, that open door is the one He's longing for you to walk into. But will you? I just have a short video clip. It's just about 5 minutes long. It's just at the kids at Metro. And to me, it's become my life. To me, these are my family. To me, it's become my home. You're standing in a culture and people are like, you're white, we're black, but you understand us, Ben. Why? Because you don't condemn them.
you're ridiculing. No, you bring a simple gospel message that changes lives, that sets a captive free. That's what they long for, is to be set free. You four generations, that all they know of is killing, stealing, robbing, murder, gang violence, prostitution. It's changing that. That's what Metro's about. You're working with 20,000 inner city kids in the ghetto, 150,000 kids worldwide. It started with one man. He's kicked up and down the streets of New York, that's been stabbed, that's been shot, that's never been set on fire. He said so many things went wrong, but he never gave up. See, sometimes we can go through so many simple things in life and we feel like giving up the first trial, the first struggle. And it gets hard. See, it's calling for that inner strength to go on, to face the battle. That trial, that struggle, that difficulty. Praying for my family for so long. Maybe that's what you're saying. God, how long, how long, how long? See, the greatest thing is when you wait, you see the glory of God. It's waiting upon Him and letting Him renew your strength. Sometimes it's hard. Don't give up. Don't let that world take away what you've known. What's that been? You've known Christ's work within your life. You know what transformation is for? What's the point of giving it up to go back out there? Because it doesn't happen for you.